Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all you wonderful F1 fans out there, not just in Canada, but around the world. If you're hearing my voice, I can only mean two possible things. That one, my name is Kelsey, and that two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. Well, normally we would start an episode off with the hot topics, but you know what? The hot topic this week is that it is the very first race of the 2024 season. That is right. We are officially in Bahrain, the first race of a 24 race season, the very first Saturday race of this season as well. We've got about five or six of those this year. So let's just get right into it. We're going to hop into qualifying. All the preseason testing is done. All the aerodynamic calculations have been met. The weather is perfect. It is qualifying time. And you would expect some things to be different when it comes to qualifying. Some things are going to stay the same. Not a whole lot of shocking results in qualifying. I'll give you a spoiler alert now. But the one thing that is guaranteed is these guys are going to get faster. Everybody is going to get faster, which means the time between them is going to get much smaller. Sometimes last season, you would see about a second between the top 10, or maybe you would see an eighth of a second between the top five. This is going to show, this stat I'm about to give you right now, definitely shows the speed of which these cars are gaining and how close in technology these teams are. By the time Q1 was done, we figured out who was staying. We figured out who was going. We figured out who was a massive disappointment so far in the season, although be it the first race, and which teams you have to watch out for. When Q1 was done, when all things were said and done, it was 1 second difference from the first to the very last car. That's right, 1 second between 20 cars from first to last. This, to me, spells the fact that this is going to be a ridiculously close season. These drivers are so tuned in, and this is the first race. The cars are brand new to them. They've got some testing under their belts. They've got qualifying, obviously, because that's what we're talking about today, but they're just going to keep getting better and better and better. So we're going to get right into Q1 right away, right now. Let's get into it. A couple of surprises just for how enthusiastic this team was, how confident this team was. And then we've got some people in there you're looking at going, well, okay, this kind of makes sense. They're not totally off the mark. Let's see if they can get any better. Let's talk about it right now. The two drivers, an entire team that I thought really missed the benchmark, and I mean absolutely shit the bed. They are a constructor's team. They build everything in-house. They have zero excuses. They know where they needed to get better. They know where they needed to shave time, shave weight, get more points, make their drivers happy. Well, they've missed every single one of those marks this weekend, starting in qualifying. 19th and 20th, respectively. It is the entire Alpine team. Ocon going faster than Pierre Gasly. This car is disgustingly overweight. We're not talking like, oh, a couple of kilos here, a couple kilos there. We're talking like double digit and higher kilos. This car is way too heavy. The aerodynamics that they have chosen for this car for the beginning of the season has not worked at all, at least in the first qualifying session. On top of them, 18th, Logan Sargeant, a Williams car. He's not a rookie anymore. He has no real excuse on his performance this year. The car has gotten better. A 100% thanks to Alex Albon. Because of his performance in the 2023 season, Williams got the money they needed to make better upgrades, to make upgrades that would keep them up in the mid-pack. We'll call it 7th, 8th. They're definitely not going to be in the top two or the bottom two this season. They're definitely on the roll to make advantages. But that means you need Logan Sargeant pulling his own weight. Again, I know this is the very first qualifying of the very first race of a very, very long season, but with a car that looks good, that everyone was happy about in testing, you would expect some of them to do a little bit better. 17th and 16th respectively. You've got the entire Kick, Steak, Sauba. I think that's it. That team itself, 16th and 17th respectively. I did kind of expect this to a certain extent. Sauba is not exactly a team to come out of the gates red hot. They like to do the development over the entire season, which makes sense to a certain extent. You want your drivers to make it out of Q1, though, especially Bottas and Joe. They are experienced drivers, especially Valtteri Bottas. Yes, you've got new sponsors. You've got new colors. It looks fantastic, but you got to perform. Bahrain weather for qualifying was perfect. It wasn't super windy. It wasn't super cold. Wasn't super hot. In my opinion, granted, I am not racing. In my opinion, weather-wise, it was in that perfect window for everyone to succeed. Unfortunately, the aerodynamic upgrades that Sauber made last year weren't exactly, you know, turning heads and breaking records, and they seem to have taken that slow developmental pace so far into the 24 season. Again, this is literally the first race of the season. They've got another one next week. I do expect them to be on the same trajectory. They will get up there, but probably I'd call it mid-season at the earliest. They'll still finish within the top six, I do believe, this year. That's because they've got a little bit more money, a little bit different thinking outside of the box, kind of aerodynamically. I do expect them to get a little bit better, but not until the second half of the season. So with Q1 done, that can only mean one more thing, and that it's time for Q2. Five down, 15 to go. Now this is where things start to get a little more interesting. It's no longer a second between the top 15 drivers. Now you start to see how the veteran drivers take care of business. You get to see how the more experienced teams start to develop their car. We've got a little bit less gas, a little bit less fuel. They're going a little bit faster. Let's see how well the aerodynamic, you know, upgrades work. But some things just do not change. Take example, number 11, Yuki Tsunoda. He is right there. He missed top 10 by 0.07 of a second. That seemed to have been his story in the 2023 season. Always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Always so close to making it to Q3, but not quite there. And unfortunately for him, he's starting off the 24 season the same way. But because they've gone through all of these name changes, a name that nobody really wants to pronounce, a name that most people don't like, you can see that he's definitely maturing as a driver. He's pushed all of that out of the way, and he needs to focus on his season this year. He doesn't have a rookie to drive against in the 24th season. Well, at least as of right now. Daniel Ricciardo is healthy. He was back for the rest of the 23 season, and he's back for 24. If Ricciardo can stay healthy, Yuki Tsunoda needs to prove to not only himself, but to what I'm going to call them RB at this point, just because the name is just so ridiculous. I'm going to call them RB for Racing Bulls, but it's still the Visa Cash App Racing Bulls. He needs to prove to RB that he deserves to have that seat. Now, the decision-making within the team needs to let him prove that. He is a very emotional driver. He always has been when he showed up, and he always will be, in my opinion. That's just how he is. He needs to work through it. It's another season. There's going to be new emotions, a longer season, so maybe he's not going to be as fired up as long. But what he needs to do, or what he needs to not do, is overpromise and try to overdeliver. Yuki, drive your race. Yes, you are racing against Daniel Ricciardo. Yes, your contract is up at the end of this season, but you need to show not only RB, but the rest of the teams that are looking for drivers, that you are a reliable choice, that you have matured since you first showed up, and that you can actually get the points. So following the rest of those bottom 10 from 11th to 15th, 12th was Lance Stroll, 13th was Alex Albon. A little bit of surprise here, especially for Alex Albon, for how he finished the season last year to the confidence that he had in the car this season. Again, I'm going to reiterate this one more time, or one of many times. I know it's the first race of the season. I did expect Albon to be a little bit closer to the top 10, if not in the top 10. He was just not able to put it together in qualifying. A little bit his fault, a little bit the car's fault. He is having issues. Well, I wouldn't call them issues. He's got a bigger learning curve than most drivers this season, just for the fact that they have gone with a 100% new steering wheel configuration. The screen is no longer built into the chassis of the car. So it's almost like Williams has finally caught up to everybody else. There is now an electronic screen on the steering wheel for Alex Albon, which he is not used to in a racing environment. Yes, he's done it in the simulators and practice and all those sorts of things. But when it comes down to it, you can, you know, you can stop, you can collect yourself, you can slow down to get used to the screen, where now it's season time. It's race season time. You have to get used to it now on the fly. He's either going to massively struggle with it, or he's going to adopt very, very fast, and we're going to see the Albon of last year. That's the Albon I hope to see. Lance Stroll showed really strong qualifying. Yes, he got out in Q2, but 12th, very, very encouraging to see. It looks like the way he's driving the car fits him a little bit better than it did last year. Obviously, he didn't have a crash. He's not hurt. His wrists are good. His feet are good. He's good to go. Hopefully, he can carry this momentum from qualifying into the race and actually earn the points that he needs to help Aston Martin climb higher than they did in the 23 season when it comes to the Constructors' Championships. And hopefully, he can continue on with his confident driving where he can gain more points in the Drivers' Championship. Ricardo in 14th. K-Mag in 15th. Kind of where I expected these guys to be. It's a Haas for Kevin Magnussen. Either you're going to pull off something spectacular, or you're literally going to hit the wall and burst into flames when it comes to qualifying. Not quite bursting into flames with K-Mag. He's very consistent. He's not setting the world on fire with his lap time when it comes to qualifying. He likes to show his abilities in the actual race. So he's qualifying where about I expected him to be. Daniel Ricciardo having some issues in the preseason testing and in, just the qualifying in general. He's getting used to the car. He's not loving the car yet. I think it's going to be a couple of races for him before he's fully comfortable within this new RB vehicle of his. Hopefully he'll be able to stay healthy this season where he can play in a full season. And again, his contract's up at the end of this season as well. He wants to stay not only in Formula One, but he has stated his ultimate goal is to make it out of RB and actually into a Red Bull racing vehicle. He's going for Checo's seat is essentially what he's doing, along with half of the other grid. Everybody wants to be driving a Red Bull this season and next season and seasons on. He's got a lot of competition, so he really has to buckle down, chin up, and just grind this season out. And drive like the Daniel Ricciardo that we know he can be. Light, enthusiastic when it needs to be. Show that performance when he has to on the track. Going into Q3, the fastest of the fast. These boys are ready to go. So to set up Q3, the Red Bulls, they weren't as dominant in qualifying as they had been in preseason testing. Neither were the Mercedes. Now, they were still up there. They were still competing. But they weren't blowing everybody away like we had thought, at least when it came to the Mercedes. Red Bull seemed to be struggling kind of out of the gate as soon as qualifying and preseason, public preseason testing happened. Now, there were a lot of reports coming from within Red Bull and hinted at a little bit by Max Verstappen that they weren't exactly showing the true potential of the car, that they were sandbagging it just a little bit. This doesn't surprise me whatsoever. Now, I don't think they were sandbagging it per se, but they started developing this car so early in 2023, and minus the big changes that we had talked about in previous episodes, the majority of the performance is based on what the RB19 did in 2023, and that was just one of the most, if not the most dominant car in modern F1 history. So you would think they wouldn't exactly have a whole lot to prove when it came to preseason testing and qualifying until it actually mattered. So I can understand Max and Checo just getting used to the car itself. It's not preseason testing. You have to try now. So Q1, Q2, okay, you're still in the top five, but you're not setting lap times on fire. Now it's either they don't want to show what the car can actually do until race day, or they can now almost mentally take a step back and go, okay, so this is where we were last year in the RB19. We've got the RB20. let's do a little bit more personal development on the car. Let's see what this car can do, because we know when we need to, we can turn up that speed, get that track time, and get that pole position or get the grid position in general. I think that's more along the track of what they were doing. They were doing a little more reconnaissance and a little bit of research just to go, okay, so the last year we did A, B, and C. Will A, B, and C work right now? If not, we've got time to tinker with it, change it, a couple of settings here and there, get as much information as you possibly can, and then move forward to dominate. The top 10 itself wasn't exactly earth-shattering. The guys were there that you would expect the guys to be there, except for one. Bottom of the list, still making top 10, Nico Hülkenberg. He is becoming a crowd favorite, especially among the Haas faithful, just because he will, I don't want to say dog it, but he's going to get through Q1. It's not going to look spectacular. He's going to get through Q2, but in a much more Nico Hülkenberg fashion. It's going to be, well, what's he going to do with this Haas? We know that Haas has put some work into the car. They haven't put a whole lot of car just because, you know, Haas is cheap and they don't have the upgraded facilities to it. So what are you going to do with it? You're going to trust Nico Hülkenberg to be like, hey, let's try this. And then all of a sudden he's throwing up lap times that are generally reserved for a Ferrari, McLaren, or a Red Bull. At one point in Q3, Hülkenberg topped the charts. He was the fastest car on track. Granted, he was probably one of the first cars out there to really push during Q3, but still, he showed that he makes it into Q3, and he's got the ability to push this mediocre car to the absolute limit and put in some proper track time. Now, once the other cars actually start to put in at least half an effort, yeah, Haas is going to be at the bottom, but Nico Hülkenberg can show what Haas can actually achieve if they put some time, effort, and actual concentration into the car itself, which was fantastic to see. It's got to boost his confidence. His contract is up at the end of 24. You put Hülkenberg in a car that's not a Haas, and that literally, take your pick, any fucking car on the grid, and he's going to bring you points. If he can do this now, in a Haas at the beginning of the season, where that company doesn't exactly put a whole lot of effort into the vehicle itself compared to every other team, guaranteed you put him in a Ferrari, you put him in a McLaren, hell, you even put him in an Alpine, and he will get you points. Guaranteed. I'm happy he finishes out the top 10. Let's go through the rest of the top 10. Max Verstappen in 1, Leclerc 2, Russell is in 3rd, Carlos Sainz is in 4th, Checo Perez is in 5th to start the race. Then it goes Alonso and Norris for 6th and 7th. Piastri is 8th. Hamilton is 9th. Very surprising to me, Hamilton is 9th. That Mercedes showed so much pace and speed and consistency that all of a sudden he's qualifying 9th. To me, that doesn't make sense. To me, that tells me that something has gone wrong with the car that they don't necessarily have time to fix in time for the race. Or maybe it was something they didn't anticipate going wrong. One of the two. Carlos Sainz. We're going to talk about him for a sec. Qualifying 4th. Okay. We all know the type of driver that Carlos Sainz is. He's a very passionate driver. He loves driving for Ferrari. Well, we also know that he has no job at the end of this season. Lewis Hamilton is going from Mercedes to Ferrari. So you still have to race this season. If there was any driver that wanted to prove his old team made a massive, massive mistake, and I mean any driver on that grid, it's going to be Carlos Sainz. If there is going to be a driver that is going to push past Mercedes, demolish McLaren, and in my opinion, really challenge Max, not just Checo, he's going to beat Checo. In my opinion, I'm calling it right now, first race of the season, Carlos Sainz is going to take 2nd in the Drivers' Championship above Perez. He is going to push Max like Max has not been pushed as long as the car can keep up in the last couple of years. It looks like Ferrari has an amazing car. They've done the right things. They've done their research. They haven't gone too far out of the box. And I think they've really nailed it. This could potentially be a Red Bull killer further on in the season. Carlos Sainz has the most to prove. hands down. Ain't no doubt about it. So I know it's the first race. Keep an eye on Carlos Sainz for the rest of the year. Something a little interesting happened at the end of Q3, just before F1 TV was about to log off. As I talked about earlier, Q1, Alpine finished dead last, 19th and 20th. Okay, there was still a second behind the first car, which is not so bad. But somebody deemed it appropriate, and someone was so annoyed and or embarrassed, take your pick, that Alpine was working on the car before the end of Q2 and Q3. They were making as many changes as they possibly could before Parc Fermé was in, was established, essentially. They showed half of the Alpine, both Alpine cars just torn apart, and the mechanics just hauling ass like mechanics do trying to fix that car. We're going to talk about Alpine a little bit later. It just doesn't show that much confidence. Or I think what may have happened is that they figured out what they did wrong and they needed to fix it immediately before Parc Fermé kicked out. So, folks, that is your qualifying for the very first race of the 2024 season. You know what? What's coming up next? It's going to be round one. Let's get into the race right now. It's time. We have waited all winter break. We have suffered through the news, the speculation, the driver drama. We have also suffered through, in my opinion, very, very disappointing and somewhat lackluster car reveals that don't really tell you a whole lot. But what does it lead up to? It leads up to the first round, round one, the first Saturday race of the 2024 season. We are talking about the Bahrain Grand Prix, 57 laps, 15 turns, a distance of 5.4 kilometers per lap, a top speed of 327.4 kilometers. The fastest lap is by Lewis Hamilton in 2020 at a minute 27. They did not break that record today. I'm telling you that much. They're still, even with these brand new cars, they are still at least 10 seconds off the fastest lap time from cars now 4 years ago. That to me is just absolutely mind-blowing and boggling that some of these records are going to stand for a very long time, because with all the technology, all the research, all the development, all the aerodynamic upgrades, they're still 10 seconds off of the fastest times. Well, let's get into the race. Alpine starting at the very back. No grid penalties for them because they got everything done before Parc Fermé was in place, which is fantastic. But they're still starting last. How are they going to end up doing? The players are ready. Everyone is anticipating a fantastic race. The only thing that's a little different this time than it was qualifying, it's dropping temperature dramatically. It's cooler. I'm using massive air quotations. It's cooler in Bahrain than they're normally expecting. Everyone's still going to run soft tires, the entire grid soft tires. Why do you run soft tires? For those of you who don't know, for those of you who are new to Formula One, when you start on a soft tire, you have more grip on the surface. Bahrain is notoriously a rough track. You're only going to be able to use these tires for 16 laps, 17, maybe 18 at the most. You're not going to see tire heroics in Bahrain when it comes to soft tires. It cannot happen. These tires just get chewed up so fast. So then you're going to switch to the hardest compound you have. Why do you switch to the hardest compound instead of softs a couple times? Because you're saving time in the pit lane. Pit lane in Bahrain is about 21 seconds. When it comes to this track, you don't want to pit more than you absolutely have to. You go to your hard tires, you can squeak out 30, 45 laps easily. Remember, it's only 57 laps. So you got to be able to squeak out 41 laps from a hard tire. You can do this. You definitely can, as long as you don't push your car too hard, as long as you don't make too many passes to get higher points. Because you know what? If you get higher the grid point you get, the grid spot during the race, maybe your tires don't last that long. All of a sudden, people and teams got to start thinking strategies all over again. Fast pit stops are what you need in this race, as long as well as every other race throughout the year. Let's get into the race right now. The start, it was great. Lance Stroll popped up a couple spots. It was a really, really good start until Lance Stroll gets hit from the back by Nico Hülkenberg. Not a massive spin, not a huge amount of damage on Lance Stroll. Nico Hülkenberg, on the other hand, absolutely, well, I don't want to say absolutely, he messed up his wing enough that he had to go in for a pit stop already. Second lap, he goes from 10th all the way down to 20th. He didn't make the top 10. He was never close for the rest of the race. Essentially, what they were doing now for Haas, for Nico, and Magnussen, essentially, it's race pace. So Haas is getting left behind. So it's recon laps. Essentially, it's 57 laps of learning what Haas can do better next week. It was unfortunate to see for Nico. He did so well to get that high in qualifying. But it was just one of those races for him. Lance Stroll was able to stay in the race. He was able to put in a very, very solid performance. I don't think I'm going to be ragging on Lance Stroll as much as I normally would. His contract, technically, should be up like everybody else's. We don't know how long he has left on his contract. No one can find out that information. But if he keeps driving this season the rest of the season, as he did this race today, he's definitely, one, showing drivers that he's actually serious. Because everybody, I'm sure, including me, makes fun of him to a certain extent. It's like, well, the only reason why you're driving is that your dad owns a team, right? So, of course, you're going to have a seat. You're not that much of a driver. He does put in a ton of laps. He does have a ton of experience, but he's still not taking that seriously. So a little bit of a bump and grind, first corner of the first lap. Hülkenberg down to 20th from 10th. Lance Stroll able to recover, and off he goes. We're going to jump to lap 5. It's very early in the race, but it kind of sets the tone of what kind of race you're going to have. A lot of guys are driving quite aggressively. A lot of guys, we're going to keep coming back to this throughout the season, a lot of guys' contracts are up this year. So there's a lot of guys who want a new contract for either 25 and 26 or a couple of years after that. So there's a lot to prove, even from the first race all the way to the last. One person who doesn't have to do that is Max Verstappen. He's signed until 2028 unless he decides to retire. I don't see Max going to any other team ever. He's going to start in Red Bull. He's going to retire in Red Bull. Well, it's time to test out the new car. We're not at the end of your contract yet. So how's this car doing, you got to ask? Well, in lap 5, by lap 5, he's already 4 seconds ahead. This car is, in my opinion, and I know it's the first race, and I keep saying this, and I'm a Red Bull fan, so take it for what you want. This car is officially the new crown jewel in Adrian Newey's developmental crown. The RB19 was amazing, set records. But the RB19 didn't have a start like this. I know, again, first race of the year, excuse me. But to see the pace, and one, more importantly, to hear Max comment about the car during the race, the RB20 is going to surpass the RB19. He's going to set new records. As long as the engine reliability, which is generally Red Bull's issue, as long as the Red Bull engine sticks with it and is able to keep up and have better consistency, Max is done. The season's done. Give him the crown. It's a little scary to see how fast this car is in the first 5 laps, how smooth it is. Then you hear Max talk about it. It's comfortable. It's acting exactly the way that I wanted it to. There's no surprises. It's great. That's a scary, very scary statement to hear in the first race of the year. Now, on the flip side, the cars that are supposed to be challenging Max, there was a little bit of, I don't want to call if it's early season jitters or maybe a developmental part that somebody missed or they're just getting used to the car. But what I noticed, especially from both Ferraris, we're talking about Ferrari now, obviously, a lot of lockups. Turns out that Leclerc he's just having one of those days. He's really fast on the straightaways. He's diving into those corners like he needs to. But as soon as he hits those brakes, all of a sudden he's got a front-end lockup. Like almost every single time. It was laughable at some point that every time you saw Leclerc, he was locking up. or it was another lockup, or they mentioned that his car was locking up again. It came to a point where he learned to drive differently about halfway through the race because he was so light on the brakes. He was still making the corners, probably a little wider than what he wanted to, going to pass the apex, but that's how he had to drive. That was not the developmental direction that he thought this car was going. Now, being said, Carlos Sainz, to the beginning of like the first half of the race, he's also having a ton of lockups. To me, that makes me think, is there a design issue in the car? Was it just a separate brake issue, period? Was it the pads, the rotors, the cable? Like, what was going on? Maybe the connection from the pedal to the cable. Was there something physically wrong that's a one-off this race? Or is it a developmental issue that these guys now officially have to go back, take a look at, spend more time, and correct? But the speed for which we saw the Ferraris move today was fantastic. I loved seeing how smooth they were. Besides the lockups, they looked fast. They looked smooth. Not a lot of porpoising. A lot of these teams figured out how low they can go before they start bouncing up and down. Almost no complaints from the drivers themselves, which is the most confident part to hear. Again, except for the lockups from Leclerc. Sainz is happy with the car. I mean, he had nothing but good things to say about it. Good pace. I think he's trying to hold back to say that I can catch a Red Bull this season because you don't want to be that boastful first race of the year. But you can see in his eyes that, okay, this is a confident car. I'm right behind this car. It's amazing. We're going to take this as far as we possibly can. The race itself for the first race of the year, not exactly a lot of drama, which was fantastic. There was a couple of yellow flags, which were quickly remedied. One of the longer safety car / yellow flags, unfortunately, not exactly a wonderful start for him. Logan Sargeant ends up running off, I think it was turn 6 or 7, one of the longer turns. Ends up that he had a brake failure or an issue of some kind. He ended up getting it replaced. They got it fixed on his next pit stop, or just kind of corrected itself. But he was off track for quite a while before he was able to get something sorted out, get it fixed. He was just unbelievably unhappy with the situation, which is totally understandable. He didn't start in an absolutely horrible position. He was 18th, not exactly the best position. But we know with Logan Sargeant, the more confidence he gets, the better he drives. He was getting the confidence in the race up until that point. And then, I mean, it's only 10 laps out of 57. I mean, it's not exactly late in the race that he gets his confidence. But after that, you could see it just kind of took the wind out of his sails. It went from you're competing for points to kind of like the Haas. It's going to be a recon race at this point. Gather as much information as you possibly can. We're going to learn about the car. We'll get the issues fixed. And you're going to come back bigger, better, and faster for next week is essentially what it turned out to be for him. Now, as I said before, the race itself wasn't filled with drama. There were some very good passing, some very good battles, wheel to wheel, car to car, which was fantastic. And then you had those times where it's kind of a bit of a DRS train until somebody pulled away, someone made a move. It was still a very entertaining race to watch if you're watching from second down, as we'll see a theme this year probably. But what is more interesting to see is we're going to come back to this. And again, we're going to come back to this point a few times this season until it starts to change. Because there are so many drivers that have their contracts done this season, I can already tell on the first race of the year, it's going to be a very aggressive year for some of these drivers until they get their contracts signed, either with their respective teams now or with a different team after this season. Perfect example. Checo Perez. So he ended up getting second in the Drivers' Championships, which was fine. Driving the RB19, how could he not? But you could tell at points that he didn't exactly have a whole lot of personal confidence in his driving. That it was the car that got him the points, not necessarily his driving all the time. Well, taking a look at this race, if he continues to drive in the manner for which he is from this race till the end of the season, he is 100% having the choice of keeping his seat in Red Bull or going wherever he wants to go. It was a different Checo than what we're used to. He was a lot more scrappy. And by scrappy, I mean, normally there'd be times going into a corner where he would back out and let the car go ahead of him because he would wait for a different opportunity. He was taking the opportunities to dive deep into these corners, take the space for the car that he wanted, for the position that he wanted, and then he would go from there. He was not afraid of a battle this year. He was nice and scrappy, aggressive on the brakes, aggressive on the straight stretches. He's taking, I don't want to say he's taking more risks, but I think he's taking the appropriate risks that he didn't take last year, which makes him look more hungry for points. He needs those points. He needs to be that driver that supports the team more than what he was last year, or he's going to be gone. I do expect Checo to fight for wins this year. I don't expect him just to be that wingman for Max, get the points, be happy with what you're doing, kind of like being the Valtteri when Hamilton was winning all those races, that Valtteri was literally just the wingman that everybody knew about. But Checo, if he continues this way, he actually legitimately has the pace, the consistency, and right now the mentality and mindset to not only get points, but to definitely either challenge for wins or get those wins. And that's exactly what Red Bull needs. And that's exactly what Checo needs to keep his seat. And I think Checo's biggest competition this year, it's not going to be Russell. It's not going to be Leclerc. It's not going to be Hamilton. It's going to be another guy who needs a new contract. And we've talked about him before. It's Carlos Sainz. In that Ferrari and how he was talking about it today, like I had said before, and I will say many, many times, he looks much more confident than he did last year. He looks aggressive. He looks, I don't want to say angry, but he looks like you don't want to fuck with him in this car. He's getting these points that he deserves. He's getting the grid spots that he deserves. He's going to make a name for himself, in my opinion, that he deserves to have. The last couple of seasons that he's been in Ferrari, from my point of view, he has gone from the team driver to the second driver to, oh yeah, you're Leclerc's wingman. He absolutely hates that. Couple on top of that, Leclerc gets an extension on his contract. On top of that, they ignore him. On top of that, Ferrari signs Hamilton to replace Sainz. So what is Sainz going to do? He's going to take the tools that he is given. Now, hopefully, Ferrari doesn't screw him over. I know they want the constructors' points, but you want to make your quote-unquote first driver happy. As long as they give him the upgrades that he deserves, that Leclerc gets as well, and he keeps this confidence, he is going to give the biggest, and I mean F1's historical size, fuck you to Ferrari, when, and in my opinion, when he gets the second in the drivers' championships. I don't think he's going to be able to catch Max, but that's just bias on my opinion because I am a Red Bull fan. But the way he's driving, again, I know it's the first race, but if he continues on this way of driving and this mindset and this aggression and the developmental path that Ferrari is going to put him on, no one's going to be able to stop him. He's going to demolish Leclerc. He's going to make Leclerc look dumb. He's going to make Ferrari look dumb for giving Leclerc the extension and firing him. He's going to embarrass Hamilton and Russell, and he's going to destroy Checo. I wouldn't be surprised that, depending on what the point count is halfway through the season, that that Carlos Sainz signs with Red Bull for 25, we'll call it a 2-year plus one contract. So he'll sign for 25 and 26 with an option for a 1-year extension. I'm going to say Carlos Sainz is going to get a 2+1 contract by mid-season this year from Red Bull. That's how dominant I see Carlos Sainz being. That's the mindset and aggression I see Carlos Sainz having in the 2024 season. As I've said before, the race itself, very entertaining, lots of passing back and forth. But you can tell it's also the first race of the season because some things didn't quite exactly go the way you wanted to. Perfect example, lap 32, Valtteri Bottas comes in for his second and final pit stop. Should be quite quick. Sauber/Kick generally has a stop time of about 2.9, maybe, 3.1 seconds. not horrible, really good for Sauber. Yeah, except for not in this case. The grand total time for the pit stop was 52.4 seconds. Absolutely demolishing Valtteri's day. It was absolutely horrible. Looking at the reviews, at first it looked like they put a tire on, but then it looked like they put the wrong tire on. Now these tires are allocated. They look the same, but they're labeled for Valtteri or for Joe. And this goes for every team on the grid. Each driver has their own allocation of tires. And if you can't take from one, because then you screw the other one. And you don't want to put used tires on when it's supposed to be new tires. So you have to stick with your driver who's coming in, their sets of tires. It looked like that they put the wrong tire on. Maybe someone grabbed Joe's tire instead of Valtteri's. So then they lift the car back up. They take the tire off. But the guy, the jack stand guy at the very front of the car who lifts the car up so you can put the tires on, he didn't wait long enough for the tire to be straight on the car. He dropped the car, but then they can't tighten the nut on the wheel because it's like the gravity is too tight on the car. That slam down just kind of stuck it in place. So now you got to lift up the car, and it took them 30 seconds alone just for that, just to get that tire straightened to put the proper tire back on for him to leave. Grand total from start to finish, Valtteri had a pit stop of over a minute, which absolutely destroyed any kind of pace he had, any kind of confidence he had, which is a very unfortunate thing that would happen to him. It seems that when something unfortunate and unnecessary happens to the majority of a driver, it's generally to Valtteri, which is totally unfair. It's not his fault. It is the team's fault. But at the same time, it's also racing. It happens. It could happen to Leclerc next weekend. It could happen to Max anytime during the season. It could happen to anybody on the grid. Just unfortunately for the first race, it happened to Valtteri, which was not an amazing thing. Something else that you noticed during the race, George Russell putting in really good lap times, but holding back the Mercedes. Turns out that he had a power unit issue, that he was able to finish the race. He did finish very respectably. He finished in the top 10. He got some points. But now I'm very, very curious to see what's going to happen for the next race, if he has to replace that power unit already, or if it's something that they can fix. You never want to start replacing parts now, because it's the first race. You got 23 more to go, and your allocations of certain things don't change, which includes power units. You have 4 power units for 20 races. You got to make them last. If you can repair it for enough for it to last 5 races, 10 races, okay, then you can repair it, because now you're going to have enough, hopefully. Russell was able to finish the race. He did put in a respectable lap time. On the same team, Hamilton, again, finished in the top 10. Not as fast as we had hoped. He started 9th. He finished 7th. So a little bit of a gain, but nothing too spectacular. He reported his seat was broken a little less than halfway through the race. Now, I didn't hear if there was an explanation of how he broke his seat or what part of his seat was broken. But you could visibly see him bouncing up and down a little bit more and a little bit more give side to side than you would normally see from an F1 driver. Now, is it a lot? Absolutely not. These guys are still pulling 5.5 Gs through corners. They are still bolted in essentially to their car, 5-point harness, custom seat, all this kind of shit. But it sounded like it was more of a part of the seat was loose, and he used the term broken. But I haven't seen, he wasn't punished. They didn't give him a black and white flag that he had to repair it, or he had to stop because of the repair or anything like that. So hopefully all they'll need for the next race is just another custom seat for him, and then Hamilton should be good to go. And the last point I'm going to make about this race before we get to the top 10 is we're going to go back to Ferrari. You can see both drivers want to win. Now, with the lockups that Leclerc had, he was very lucky to finish where he did. He finished in the top 10, as always. He even finished in the top 5, just essentially for the machinery that he has underneath him. But you can tell that these guys are still going back and forth the entire race. Now, you want to encourage your drivers to race against each other, because you still want to get points. in the constructors and for your drivers. But there comes a point, and this has been shown in the history of F1 for the 75 years it's been around, that when teammates compete against each other too much, it can be very detrimental to the team. Now, I'm not saying that when Sainz and Leclerc compete against each other, that it's detrimental, but there were some parts in the race where there are unnecessarily, in my opinion, side-by-side racing, wheel-to-wheel, around corners. They weren't dangerous, but I think it was a little bit more risks that were taken that didn't need to be taken this early in the season. To build animosity against your co-driver is never a good thing. It's even worse when you start at the beginning of the season. Now, when we see this kind of competition against these guys, or between these two guys, it can only bring up one question. Is this going to make the team better? Or is this going to be more of a self-destruct kind of situation for the last season that Sainz is at Ferrari? Another team that was having, I know I said it was the last part, but another team that was having, in my opinion, unnecessary issues or just the wrong strategy call, but I think it was a little bit one related to another, an unnecessary strategy call that's leading to unnecessary drama and animosity in a team, is RB. Near the end of the race, Ricardo had stated that he is faster than Yuki Tsunoda, who was ahead of him, which is fair. If you're faster, you're faster. But in Yuki's mind, and I kind of agree with him to a certain extent, it was team orders. Yuki was to get passed by Ricardo. It was a whole hubbub to do about nothing. Like, if the team gives you orders, let him fucking pass. And then all of a sudden, Yuki's like, he's not that fast. He's not faster than me. Why did you make him do this? Why did you make him do that? Why did you tell me to do this? He's showing the maturity of a 12-year-old. I know I said before that he needs to show the team that he needs to stay in his seat, but he's not showing the maturity that the team needs to see for him to stay in the seat. So a lot of team drama. Hopefully they get it fixed, but maybe it was just first race jitters. Maybe it was a statement that, hey, I've been here longer than you, kind of a little bit of a pissing contest. But yeah, I don't think this one's going to go for a positive spin for RB. Hopefully they get it sorted out next week. But yeah, not quite what you want to see for the first race of the season. And after 57 laps later, we've got our top 10. Let's go through the top 10 right now. Surprise, surprise. Max Verstappen is in first. Checo Perez in second. Verstappen also got the fastest lap as well. So clean sweep for Red Bull, the first race of the year. Sainz was third. Leclerc was fourth. Russell fifth. Norris was sixth. Hamilton was seventh. Oscar Piastri was eighth. Alonso was ninth. And Lance Stroll was 10th. Oscar Piastri, a little bit of a quiet race. Solid race for the first race of the season. He's not trying to make a massive statement. He just wants to continue on with the points that he gained last year and the consistency, which is very, very important for him. I expected Mercedes again to be a little bit higher, especially Hamilton for the time that he had set, but again, broken seat. Maybe they tweaked something they didn't need to tweak. Hopefully they'll have it fixed for next week. At one point with Max, okay, his dominance continues. And I don't mean that lightly. At one point when the pit stops are going on, his closest competitor was 44 seconds away. That was Fernando Alonso. He had time to do two full pit stops and still be out front. By the time he won, he was 16 seconds ahead of Checo Perez. Like, that's how dominant this car is already. Plus his comments on how much he loved it. I think it's just going to be one of those years. Moving into the Drivers' Championship points, Max Verstappen with 26, Checo Perez with 18, Carlos Sainz is in third with 15, and Leclerc is in fourth with 12, Russell's in fifth with 10, Norris is in sixth with 8, Hamilton is in seventh place with 6 points, Piastri is in eighth with 4th, Alonso's in ninth with 2nd, and Lance Stroll's in 10th with 1. So, that's essentially, if you don't know how the points break down, this is a perfect example. Top 10, that's who gets points, and that's how the points are broken down. Constructors' Championships, we'll get into that. Red Bull is first with 44 points, then Mercedes is in second with 27. Ferrari's in third with 16 points. McLaren's is in fourth with 12. Aston Martin's in fifth with third. And then from sixth to 10th, which is Kick, Haas, RB, Williams, and Alpine, they all have 0 points to start the season. Nothing to be worried about, especially from 6th to 10th. You know these guys are going to start picking up points. They're going to start changing some of the setups, and the point lead, hopefully at some point, will change, at least from 3rd to 10th. So if you are a fan of those teams, in my opinion, absolutely nothing to worry about at all. So with all that being said and the numbers given out, I'd like to, at this point, talk about the story of the race. In this case, it would be the stories of the race. And it's not exactly the performance of the drivers or the track or anything off track, which we're going to cover. I'm going to talk about that for a quick second. We all know that if you've been following the Christian Horner drama, I guess we'll say, we know that it was reconciled and finished to a certain extent. There has been, what do you want to consider? There has been some extra added drama added to what has been happening with all of that. I personally, I am not going to be covering this. I don't feel that it is a benefit to anybody because I like talking about the stuff that is race related. All of this has absolutely nothing to do with the performance of Max or Perez. It has nothing to do with the performance of the team itself. In my opinion, this is just totally his personal drama that I will not be covering in this podcast unless something drastic changes. Like, say he does leave, and I'm not saying he is, but let's say he does leave Red Bull. I will be announcing that on the podcast in the Hot Topics session, but I will not be covering the rest of that drama. I don't feel that it would add anything to the podcast itself. I don't feel it appropriate to air out that kind of information, essentially that kind of dirty laundry, period. It was his mistake or not mistake. He's going to deal with it how he wants. I'm just going to stick strictly to racing. So, stories of the week, stories of the race. We're going to start off with Russell, the power unit issue. I know these cars are getting super high tuned. Like, these are like the highest performing cars in the world. Arguably, some people say NASCAR, so on and so forth, whatever you love when it comes to motorsports, you're going to say that's the highest pinnacle of motorsport. I just happen to follow Formula One. I think F1 cars are the highest pinnacle of motorsport. But it also makes me think that with the new regulations coming into 26, teams want to push their vehicles as hard and to the line as they possibly can, which is understandable. You want to get the points, you want to get the money, you want to get the championship. But I think at some point, just human engineering can only go so far until the next massive innovation. And I don't think we're at that innovation part yet. And the reason why I think that is because one of the most influential teams in Formula One history is already having power unit issues in the first race, less than halfway through the race. Now, this could just be a one-off, or this could be Mercedes pushing the limit a little bit too far. Now, this makes me a little bit cautious because it's such a long season. Are we going to start to see more and more mechanical issues with these cars earlier in the season just because they're pushing them so hard? Are we going to see this just being a one-off and they've got it totally squared away? I want to hope that it's the latter. I want to hope that this is just a one-off. They're going to get it squared away. But if not, I mean, 24 races and you're only allowed 4 power units. If they have to replace this power unit and it's not salvageable later on, because you can always go back to work on an older power unit and put it back in your car, and that doesn't count towards your allocation. But if you can't save this power unit for the next race, you only have 3 more to go, and you got 23 races to go. The odds are not forever in your favor when it comes to this. I hope, as a fan, and as a podcaster, and as someone who just wants to see fair play in sports, that they can get this rectified. Because to see a team like Mercedes have their year just absolutely demolished because of mechanical failures. Again, it's part of motorsports. I understand that, but it would be a shame to see Lewis Hamilton's first or last year potentially get affected with a power unit issue, just like George Russell. Or George Russell has an amazing season and he's catching a lot of points. He might become champion. Then all of a sudden there's too much strain on the mechanical parts and it's falling apart on him and he doesn't win the championship. It would be a heartbreaking way to see that season end. But then again, that is motorsports. On the same topic, it kind of went under the radar a little bit just for how he performed. Lando Norris ended up taking two new parts for his car as well. He ended up taking an control electronics bit in his car. You're only allocated two for the entire season. He's already replaced one. So like you start with one and you're only allowed, like he's already replaced it. And then on top of that, his energy store, he's already used one. He had to replace that as well. Now, these parts are much more significant when it comes to grid penalties if you got to replace it again. If you've got to replace and get a brand new control for electronics, the CE, it's like a 10-place grid penalty no matter what. Now, of course, McLaren's going to go back and try to fix the old ones. But again, it's a different type of mechanical failure so early in the season. Maybe for performance for these teams, you need to just back off just a little bit. Maybe you give that extra time to develop what you need for the 25 season or later on this season. Just take it a little easy on your mechanics. And the last story of the race that we're going to cover, and it came right after the Grand Prix. So technically, I could have put this in the hot topics, but I didn't want to jump the gun. I wanted to set the tone. Because of Alpine's very poor performance in qualifying and very poor performance in the race, both drivers didn't make it out of the bottom five. Alpine has the head of aerodynamics and the tech director of Alpine has retired. He has resigned. He has left. It's the first race, and your head of aero and tech director resigned. Is the car bad? Yes. Okay. Now, it's not the worst car ever developed in Formula One for the first race. If you remember last season, McLaren didn't exactly have an awesome machine either, but they trusted the process. Now, I think the only reason why he resigned is the fact that Alpine has been kind of stuck in sixth or seventh spot for the constructors, which is not a horrible place to be, but you want to be higher. But I think it's more of the fact that they are a in-house build everything type of company. They don't buy aerodynamic designs from any other team. They develop their own stuff from start to finish. And I guess they had just absolutely zero faith in their technical director for this season from one race, from the first race of the season. Did they think that the aerodynamic upgrades throughout the season were just not good enough? Did they look at the upgrades and go, this is not good enough, and he didn't change them? So many things behind the scenes that we do not know about, but I think, I know it's a little early to call, but because literally just because of this one act that Alpine has done, I think that the rest of the season for Alpine is more of a research and development project than actually trying to race for points, for wins, and constructors standing. I mean, they do need the sponsorship money. Every team does. But I think this is the beginning of the end for Alpine. They're not quite at rock bottom yet, but this is a very, very good start. They don't have an announcement on who's going to replace him. Are they going to get two people, one for aero and one for tech director? Are they going to get one person to do both again? With all these brand new investors in Alpine, could it be too many cooks in the kitchen, too many voices wanting to go in too many directions, and none of it makes sense? Unfortunately for the fans, and definitely unfortunately for the drivers, they're the ones that are going to bear the brunt of the decisions of the directors of Alpine and the sponsors and the new co-owners and everything attached to it. What does Alpine do? I hope they bounce back. I hope that they get their house in order. And I would really love to see them go the developmental path that McLaren took last year. Even to that extent, you start off with a shit car and you just trust the process and you work up, and you have, by the end of the season, you have a car that's challenging for points. I hope it's not essentially the end of the season for Alpine already, but the way they're going, it doesn't look good. And that is the recap of the first race of 2024. But when is the next race, you may be asking? Well, the next race is the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, and that is March 7th and 9th weekend. It is another Saturday race. I'm kind of liking these Saturday races. They're not too early, they're not too late. It just kind of mixes things up. So for us here in North America, in Calgary, here are the times that you, if you want to watch the full practice, qualifying, and race, here are the times that you need to know. Practice, full practice one and two are happening on Thursday. Full practice one is 6:30 a.m. our time. Practice two is at 10 a.m. our time. Friday is a very busy day. You've got practice three at 6 a.m. Then Friday, you've got qualifying at 10 a.m. Not too early, not too late, which is fantastic. Unfortunately, it is a work day, so hopefully your boss is very understanding that either you come in late or, you know, maybe you put your smartphone right on the side and maybe you watch qualifying quietly in the office. Finally, race Saturday, it's pre-qualifying or pre-race show is at 9 a.m., race is at 10 a.m., and then the post-race show after that is around about 11, goes to about 11:30 noon. It's another warm track. It's supposed to be great weather, a lot of fast cars. We'll see what these teams have learned from the very first race. Hopefully, they'll take it into the second race and further on into the season. And with that, I would just like to say thanks for everyone for tuning into F101. Until next time, keep the adrenaline pumping and the wheels spinning.